You're all set? I'm not all set. God's Wild Kingdom this evening. Oh, let's see. There we go. Are we on? Are we live? I'm live. All right. Okay, we have talked about flexibility the last four weeks, actually. Tonight, we're going to use a creature in God's Wild Kingdom, and then we're going to talk about a Bible character, and we're going to change gears a little bit. We're going to talk about the word loyalty. Loyalty. And what does it mean to be loyal? We're going to ask to define loyalty. We could probably get a good idea, but there's a lot of things involved in loyalty, and you're going to see different aspects of loyalty as we go through this in the next 4 weeks. We're planning on covering this and looking at a creature. The creature that we're going to look at tonight, some of you got to see firsthand. Last year, I think, or maybe it was 2 years ago, at Creation Explorers, and we'll show you a picture from that in a little bit. But what do we mean by loyalty? What is the quality of loyalty? Loyalty, first of all, we're going to talk about tonight, adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of those I am serving. Adjusting my schedule. I encourage you to write these things down and write the verse down. Memorize the verse. You ought to be taking notes when you're under the preaching of God's Word. You ought to be taking notes when you're listening to or reading God's Word. And you ought to be memorizing Scripture. If we're not memorizing Scripture, we can't live the Christian life. We can't do God's will if we're not memorizing and meditating on Scripture. And I ought to write down things as we go through this. So first of all, loyalty is adjusting my schedule to meet the needs. I'll even ask next week. Maybe we'll give out some candy next. Maybe we'll give out some candy tonight. I don't know. We'll see how we do here. Loyalty is adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of those whom I serve. A verse I'm going to give you, Proverbs 27:1. Some of you probably know this verse already. It's a verse that's worth memorizing if you don't know it. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. Proverbs 27:1. Let's read it together, all right? Proverbs 27:1. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. Proverbs 27:1. Don't put too much faith and confidence in tomorrow. May never come. Who would have ever thought at the beginning of this year that we would be doing what we're doing this summer? We don't know. Only God knows what's going on tomorrow. We ought to just do what we can today. Be loyal to those that God's put us under today, part of being loyalty is adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of those that I am serving, that I'm serving today. Well, we're going to look at a Bible character today. Let me just tell something about him. You're not going to probably guess. I didn't guess who it was when I read the beginning of this. An opportunity of a lifetime came to this military general as he was appointed to be the commander-in-chief of the king's army. He did not understand the meaning of loyalty, including that of punctuality. He was negligent in his first command, showing up late for his first major appointment, not only cost him his career, but literally cost him his life. Adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of those whom I serving. Not doing what I want to, not in my time, not showing up, not doing what I want to do when I'm ready, but doing things that the one that's in charge, when he says. Not only what he says, but when he says to do it. It's a great lesson in loyalty. Well, I want to tell you a little bit about a run-in that I had with one of these creatures a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago. In the autumn, I like to get up early in the morning when I get an opportunity, when I don't have anything scheduled that morning, and do a little deer hunting. My wife kind of makes fun of me because of my little routine that I go through. You might too if you knew all that I did. I get up quite a few hours before the sun comes up, and then I go take my No smell 'em shower. Use the soap and the shampoo that you can't smell. Have a special towel that mama doesn't wash this. I wash it with a special soap that has no smell and a fabric softener that smells like dirt. And then when I'm done, I put on my clothes that smell like dirt that have been washed. I do my own laundry for these things. The laundry soap that has no smell and the fabric softener that smells like dirt. And I don't know if this is necessary, but it's just my routine. Of course, I got to do all my exercises and stretching out and have breakfast, have a little prayer time because I'm going to have a better prayer time out in the woods, and I'll get a little closer to heaven, hopefully. And then I jump in the car and drive this particular morning. I didn't have to drive very far, just 10 or 12 miles. I regularly ride my bike by there to do my scouting during the summer, and sometimes through the park where I'm going. And this particular park, you can't use tree stands unless you carry them in. So I've got my tree stand that's a lightweight tree stand that I carry on my back. I've got some clothes because of the hike and because of the tree climbing. I don't want to wear too many of these clothes, so I put them in a bag and put them on that pack, and I'm going to dress after I get up in the tree and cool off a little bit with my no-smell-em clothes again, and maybe sprinkle some stinky stuff on the ground. I don't usually do that, but sometimes they say that helps. I don't know. And then I get to the tree, and this tree stand, put it on the tree. It comes in two parts, so if you're not familiar with it. One, you strap it on the tree and you're going to put your arms in it. The other, you're going to strap your feet in it and put it on the tree, and you kind of shimmy up the tree. Before you do that, then you put the safety rope on. And you do all this in the dark, by the way. You can kind of see because of the moonlight if there's a moon in the morning or sometimes a star. It's usually bright enough, even on a cloudy, starless night. It's generally cloudy, clear enough to see while you're in the open field. But when you get in the woods, you got to know where you're going ahead of time. I got the tree, special tree picked out that I know I can get up. There can't be any branches on it, and I've got to make sure that I can shoot, so I check it out during the daytime at other times of year. And I get up in the tree and tie my tie rope on that I'm kind of shimmying up with the tree and get all set and pull everything up and finally get all settled down. Now it's about an hour before the sun's going to come up. Now, legally, you can't shoot anything for a half hour before the sun comes up. Sometimes you can see things. You generally can't see much at that time. But there happened to be a moon shining that you could see up through the treetops, but you couldn't see anything on the ground. Sometimes you hear things running down to the ground. You're not sure what they are. Of course, you can tell a big story that it was the biggest monster buck that you've ever seen, but it's probably a raccoon. But that makes a better story to add to it a little bit. While I was sitting up there in the darkness, all of a sudden, and the way my eyes are, sometimes I see things that aren't there, especially out of the corner of my eye. And sometimes I don't see things that are there. So that makes it a little added challenge. So I was sitting there, and all of a sudden, got all set up, and in the darkness, something was coming at me that looked like a B-52 bomber. But it was coming right through the trees. And I'm not sure what in the world is this. And I turned my head to watch it, and it's getting bigger and bigger and closer and closer. And I'm not sure what this thing is. And it literally lands in it. I mean, it looked like it had a wingspan of about 6 foot. But the biggest they get is about a 2 foot wingspan. But in my eyes, at that time of day, it looked much bigger than that. It landed on a branch so close that I could just about reach out and touch it. If I took one of my arrows, I could have touched it with my arrow. But I'm looking at this thing as it lands, and I think, if I flinch, that thing is going to move. I want so bad to take a picture of it, but I can't get my camera out. And I just was looking at it, and I didn't want to look with both eyes to give myself away. And it was just staring at me and just sitting there for the longest time. And it was the coolest thing I experienced, I think, that year in hunting. What was that thing? Didn't make a sound when it came through the woods. It flew right through those tree limbs that I couldn't make out the tree limb. And this thing's coming 175 miles an hour, I'm sure. A completely soundless, a stealth bomber coming at me. Right through the trees and landing right. You know what it is, Elizabeth? You know what it is? What is it? You got it. I was wondering if somebody's going to get that. I got to get down where I can reach this. It was this is a picture one that we saw with the Creation Explorers last year. A great horned owl is what it was. That one was in captivity. That one was injured. Some of you at Creation Explorers, remember we saw that in Dixon, at Lowell Park in Dixon in the Nature Center there. It was a great horned owl. They are one of the most beautiful birds. Now, Amy had a picture. That wasn't a great horned owl, though, was it? I think it was just a barn owl or whatever they call them. It didn't have the horns. That's all I know. They look the same other than they don't have the horns. In fact, I had a picture of one that I thought was one, but I looked at it again. Oh, it's not a horned owl. It's just so I had to borrow some pictures because the pictures I had didn't turn out very good. It's hard to get a picture of them, but Amy had a picture of one, an owl eating a possum in her backyard the other day. Let me tell you something about the great horned owl. Let me tell you a little story of that owl, of how it illustrates loyalty to its young today. Those horns that they're called are really just feather tufts. They're not their ears. They look like they could be ears. They look like they're referred to as horns, but all they are is feathers. They look a little scary. Maybe that's why God gave them to them, to make them look a little scarier. They have very large ears, but that's not where their ears are. In fact, their ears are kind of curious because they're kind of like some of us had this fear when we were kids that our ears were a little lopsided. Their ears literally are lopsided. They're very large ears, but they're covered completely with feathers. They don't stick out like our ears. They're just inside their skull, and one of them's a little higher than the other one. So if they had ears, they would look kind of like this. They're a little off-centered because it helps them to detect the direction sounds are coming from. And they have very good hearing. They also have very good eyes. Most people are very familiar with that. That thing could see where it was going, and I couldn't hardly see what it was till it got close to me. I thought it was the War of the Worlds starting all over here again or something when it was coming through the woods at me. And its eyelids, it's actually got three different sets of eyelids in each eye. The inner eyelid really works just like a wiper blade. You can't see it when it blinks. You can't see it. It literally just moistens their eyes. So it looks like their eyes are wide open all the time, but it's just got a transparent lid that just goes up and down that you can't see when it blinks. You can't see it's there, but it keeps their eyes moistened like we do when we blink. Therefore, they don't have to blink and lose sight of what they're looking at. Their eyes are very unique in that they have night vision. They can see things very far away, very good eyes, their pupils can dilate and everything, so they can see good in the daytime, but especially they like to go at nighttime to hunt. They have very unique feathers that cause them to fly silently. In fact, the idea of the stealth fighter jets and bombers kind of they did a lot of study on these birds because they can fly completely silent, unlike any other large bird. And part of that reason is their flight feathers in the front. I don't know if you can see that on there or not. They have little fuzzy things on there that literally breaks the wind and the noise of the wind. So when they fly, you don't hear anything. Now, by the way, and I'm up in that hunting stand where I happen to be that way. They're about three-quarters of a mile away are some of these windmills. And the whole time you're up there, you're hearing and just constantly. Sometimes it sounds like an airplane low flying over. It's just the hum of the generator in those windmills. And they're a little ways away, but this thing has no... usually things that fly, when they get close, even a hummingbird, we talked about a while ago. I was out doing some work around some flowers, and hummingbirds were buzzing around me. Well, you could hear them hum, and you could hear them chirp and everything else. But this thing's completely silent. Partially because of the uniqueness of their wings. And I think if you ever get a close-up look at one, especially in the wild, when they're in captivity, they kind of lose some of their coloring because they don't have as good of an environment. The color is just amazing in those feathers. I think they're the most beautiful bird that God has ever created. And the camouflage colors of that bird, and of course, they've got very strong talons. They've got three in the front, one in the back that... if they grab a hold of your arm, it's going to leave a mark, I can guarantee you, and might leave more than a mark. They have a very unique, and their talons also, I'm going to say this, their feet, we talked about the snowshoe rabbit last time that has fuzzy feet that helps it from sinking in the snow and keeps them warm also. Their feet are, I mean, they have better traction than Air Jordans. They can, even without those talons, they stop on wet pavement, they'll stop dead. They've got great traction on the heels of their feet. Even if it weren't for their talons, so their claws or their hands are very unique. Another thing about them is that they've got a very large mouth. Now their mouth looks very small, doesn't it? Their mouth is actually quite large. You just don't see it until it opens its mouth up. And if you're a mouse or a small animal of any kind, you don't want to see him open his mouth. That mouth literally goes from all the way from one side of the head to the other side of the head. When it opens up big enough to swallow a mouse easily whole. It was never taught by his mama to take small bites. And it takes very large bites. And it doesn't have any way to chew its food. It doesn't chew its food 20 times or whatever before it swallows anything. It just takes it in and swallows it whole. Doesn't get to debone anything, just swallows things, feathers, bones, and all. And then it has a very unique way to digest its food. It's always fun to talk about the way animals digest their food, isn't it? You can always tell when there's owls around because you'll find pellets or castings. Now, what do these things look like? Well, here's a picture of one, all right? This isn't one that I took. Notice the hair. Boy, you talk about a hairball, a fur ball, and the bones and things that they can't digest. Once they've done turning the meat and things that they want, and then in their stomach, it turns into liquid so they can swallow it. It just burp, kind of like some of the teenagers I know at the dinner table, right? Or some of the men I know. Some of you are looking at each other. And just kind of, you don't have to do the Heimlich maneuver. It does it all by itself. And you'll find these things laying on the ground. Well, how does this bird illustrate loyalty? Some of you have maybe read some things or seen pictures. Maybe you've had different owls living around your house that you've seen or in trees. Something unusual about this particular bird is, I'll put the screen up here. He illustrates loyalty by adjusting his schedule to meet the needs of those they're serving. And we're talking about the female great horned owl especially. They, of course, migrate like other birds to the south in the wintertime, but they make their way up north much earlier than any other birds do. In fact, they come back up north in this part of the country as much as 2 months ahead of any other bird that would migrate. And they look around and they find maybe an abandoned crow's nest or a hole in a tree somewhere that they can make their nest in the very early spring or literally the late winter. And when they build that nest, they kind of oftentimes take whatever they can. They kind of line it with their own down feathers. And as soon as they get their nest put together, they lay eggs, maybe three or four little white eggs. And of course, that time of year, it still gets very cold. Sometimes they'll have to sit there for days without ever leaving the nest because if they leave for just a few minutes, those eggs would get warm enough that they would die. So it really cannot even leave the nest. It's got to store up enough food not only to make the migration back up north, but then to lay the eggs and to build the nest, lay the eggs, and to keep the eggs incubated until they hatch. The cold temperatures require a constant incubation. And they certainly illustrate adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of the young that they're serving. Their dedication shows the denial of self and their appetite. And then, eventually, those little eggs will hatch. Aww. I'm going to say it. Aww, they're cute. There's some little baby. And again, I couldn't take these pictures, so I had to borrow some pictures. These newly hatched owlets, just like any newborn animal needs a lot of food. And mama's on the brink of starvation because she's had to sit on the nest 24 hours a day, every single day until those eggs hatch. And that's part of the reason she comes so early, because that time of the year there's no leaves on the trees. There's no undergrowth in the bush. In fact, that's my favorite time of year to go out in the woods, because you can see things in the landscape and the bluffs and things that you would never see this time of year, because everything's clear. You can literally see for maybe a mile into the brush. That this time of year you might be fortunate to see 100 yards in that same area. Because there's nothing underneath, any movement, any little mouse or anything that it sees crawling underneath, it doesn't have to go far to hunt. It just swoops right down. I mean, dinner's, it's room service to this animal. Doesn't have to go far, and it can find a lot of food to regenerate its energy and to feed its little owlets, because it made a point to come back up north much earlier. The early bird gets the worm, right? But then the second mouse gets the cheese. But never mind that. But he comes up early, and because he needs to do that, he's got to adjust his schedule. Because I know it's not convenient, it's not easy to leave early in the year to come up north when it's still cold. But things have got to be done that way. Otherwise, when those owlets hatch, there's not going to be enough food, and we can't journey a long ways to find that food. And this way it comes to us because it's very easy to spot and very easy to find that time of year. Well, we're going to look at a Bible character that also illustrates loyalty, or maybe we could say the lack of loyalty. Loyalty is adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of those I am serving. Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. If you ever have an appointment, say, we'll just put that off. Never do today what you can put off till tomorrow. That's some people's motto, right? I need to do it right now. And it's so easy to put things off, and it can be very costly to do that. Now, I'm going to have to give you a family chart here. Sometimes I do funerals for people here in town, and I kind of jokingly say, man, I need a chart to figure out this family. How are they related to this person and that person? And not only here, anywhere. And my family has grown so large with nephews and nieces and great-nephews and great-nieces and great-great-nephews and all. I can't keep track of anybody anymore. I got them on my prayer list kind of sorted out, but pretty soon I'm going to have to start grafting this out to figure out who's who in my own family. But we're going to talk about David. And maybe one of the things that David, of course, there's a number of things that David is very familiar, very well known for. And one of those things is the sin of adultery with Bathsheba. And not only committing adultery with Bathsheba, who he lusted after, but then arranging the murder of her husband, Uriah. Now, I say that, this is just kind of background here to the character we're going to talk about. When David committed that sin in 2 Samuel 12 and verse number 10, we're going to turn to 2 Samuel 20 here in a minute, if you want to start turning now. 2 Samuel 12 and verse number 10, God said to David, "Now therefore the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite." Because of that sin, God pronounced a judgment on David, on his family, for the next generations, that the sword is never going to leave his house. Now, we're going to look at part of David's family and talk about that sword in his family. I put part of the family tree, if you want to call it that, the family chart of Jesse. Of course, David was a son of Jesse. He had different brothers and sisters. We're only going to focus on the three children of Jesse. The one son, Zeruiah, and his daughter, Abigail, and the son, David, the one who became the king. Now, I'm looking at those just because the characters we're going to talk about are the grandchildren of Jesse. They're all of the house of David. David's two children that we're going to talk about. Of course, David had a number of children. There's Absalom and Amnon. And then Abigail's son is Amasa. That is going to be the one that we're going to talk about mostly tonight. And then Joab and Abishai, two of the three sons that the Bible talks much about, of the sons of Zeruiah. Now, this event that we're focusing on tonight, and there's a lot of details we could, I'm purposely leaving them out so we don't confuse you too bad. I'm going to leave this chart up here while I tell you a little bit of story so you can keep the characters straight, and I'll try to keep them straight too, because I get the names all mixed up when I do this. Why can't they just name them like Pete, George, Sam, Fred? And they come up with all these crazy names. But David's all right, but the rest of them, I'm not sure here. Or Rocky, that's a good name, right? This is a climax during Absalom's rebellion. Of course, Absalom was one of the sons of David Amnon murdered, Amnon committed adultery or incest, and Absalom murdered, and Absalom went into hiding, and now Absalom's come back, and he's led a rebellion, chased David away from the throne, and caused a civil war, and led the nation to run David literally out of town. Now these are all David's children and David's nephews that we're focusing on today. Absalom, when he rebelled, chose Amasa, who would have been his cousin, to be his general in his army as he chased David out of the castle. And Amasa, you can see, as he had a father named Jether. Amasa actually was an illegitimate child of Abigail, but he was still the nephew of David. David, are you getting this so far? I've tried to make this as clear, as simple as I can, and not confuse myself, because if I confuse myself, I'm going to confuse you, and it's hard to do this without confusing myself, let alone without confusing you. So Absalom chooses Amasa to be his general. They run David out of town, and David flees with his general, who happens to be Joab, another one of his nephews. And Joab also had a brother named Abishai, who we'll see a little bit later in 2 Samuel chapter number 21 in a little bit. But this is the events that lay the foundation of what's happening. And of course, Absalom was riding through the forest on his mule, and his hair got caught in a tree, and he got tangled up in the tree. What a sight that must have been. And Joab, David's general, was given specific orders. I want you to defeat the army, but I don't want you to hurt my son, Absalom. And of course, Joab came and found Absalom hanging in a tree. He couldn't resist. He took three darts, three spears, and pierced him through the heart of Absalom, and killed Absalom. Came back to report to David, "We've defeated the enemy." And David's first, "Well, what about my dear little son that could do no harm? Let alone this son's trying to kill Daddy." But in Daddy's eyes, "Oh, he's such an innocent little boy. He's such a cute little, good little boy." But Joab, the word gets back to David that Joab had killed Absalom because he was the enemy of David, even though David specifically gave orders, "I don't want you to harm my son," even though he's leading this rebellion. Now, David, of course, was upset at that, demoted Joab, and said, "Joab, you're fired as my general. You're no longer the leader of my army." And now David is seeking to reunite this country that has just gone through a civil war. So he hired to replace Joab Amasa, who was the leader in the rebellion. Now, he gave him, forgave him of what he did, and that's another whole story, but he said, "Well, in order to unite both sides back together, to restore unity in the kingdom, Amasa, I want you to take the job of Joab to be the general of my army." Now, Amasa is the character that we're going to focus on here in just a minute. I'm still trying to lay the foundation. That's going to take more time than to emphasize what I want to point out tonight. Now, in that time, an enemy realizes the kingdom's at an all-time weak point right now. This is my opportunity to act if I'm going to overthrow Israel. That king's name is introduced to us in 2 Samuel chapter 20 and verse number 1. And there happened to be there a man of Belial, a man of the devil, whose name was Sheba, the son of Berkai, a Benjamite. And he blew a trumpet and said, "We have no part in David, neither have we inheritance with this son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel." He was rounding up an army. Now, David knew the sons of Benjamin, those Benjamites. You'll watch out for that guy. Benjamin's a tough dude. The Benjamites were tough soldiers. And he was not only rounding up Benjamin, he was rounding up anybody he could to join. I mean, people were sick and tired of what was going on with David. The sins that he was guilty of, the chaos because of what was going on in his family and his nephews and the battles that were going on constantly between them. And they said, "Well, we're about ready for a new king. We're about ready for someone new to take over." So this man, this son of the devil named Sheba, rose up an army. And David realized, if we're going to defeat this guy, we're going to have to act now. We can't put this off till next year or next month. We've got to do something right now. So he called his new general in, named Amasa, and said, "Amasa, I want you to gather these men that just came back from battle. They're experienced soldiers. We're outnumbered, but we've got the experience that they don't have. And if we act now, we can defeat them before this gets out of hand." So he said, "Amasa, I want you to go out, round up all these men, and meet me back in this spot in exactly 3 days with your army ready to go." 3 days later, David shows up. He looks out and sees the army, but he doesn't see Amasa. He decided to sleep in that morning. He decided he needed an extra cup of coffee before he went out on the battlefield. That's great to be the general. And I rounded the army up, but yeah, we're in no big hurry. Oh, he was showing his disloyalty and going by his time schedule, doing what he... It's kind of like when mom says to take the trash out. That's the old story. We'll do it later. Huh? When I was a kid. After Gilligan's Island's over with, we'll do it. That dates me, doesn't it? We'll do it when I'm done with this game. And we do it on our schedule instead of the schedule of the one that we're serving. Now, 3 days, in fact, in chapter 20, verse number 4, then the king said to Amasa, "Assemble me an army in Judah in 3 days and be there present." And Amasa went and assembled the men of Judah in verse number 5. And he tarried longer than the set time which he had appointed him. He didn't show up when it was time to show up. He was AWOL. In verse number 6, let's read verse number 6. "And David said to Abishai, 'Now shall Sheba, the son of Berechi, do us more harm than did Absalom.'" He looked to Abishai. Remember, Abishai was another one of his nephews, the brother of Joab, who he had fired. Now, wherever Abishai went, Joab went. That's something about those two brothers. They were inseparable brothers. Joab was the general that was dismissed from his job, and now Abishai was given the job to lead the battle of David's soldiers. But Joab was there alongside of him. Well, Amasa finally shows up. He was out too long celebrating the night before. He finally shows up, and Joab, who's no longer in charge, but his brother's in charge. He has special privileges because his brother's the head honcho here. Joab calls Amasa, "Hey, cousin, come on up." Remember, they were cousins. He calls him over. And sometimes I'm tempted to do this when I see somebody that has a beard like Amasa, you know, those King Tut beards. Josh, I remember a few years ago, a bus kid that came back to the Lord and got saved and baptized and served the Lord for a little while. He had one of those beards. I kidded him when he got back. "Josh, I want to just grab you by that thing and lead you around town." Maybe Amasa had that kind of beard, but Joab comes over to Amasa and, "Brother, it's good to see you. Good you finally showed up to the battle. It's a blessing to see you. Come on over here, my brother. Let me give you a hug." And while he was approaching him, the sword started to slide out his side. So he grabbed it with one hand. He walked up to Amasa. Well, look what it says in verse number 9 and 10. "And Joab said unto Amasa, Art thou in health, my brother? And Joab took Amasa by the beard and kissed him with the right by the beard of his right hand and kissed him. Took him by the beard." There's a handle you couldn't let go of. And pulled him in. "Brother, let me give you a kiss." Ooh, that's kind of gross, isn't it? He's my cousin. Instead of kissing cousins, they became killing cousins. And he reached for a sword in his left hand and stabbed Amasa and smote him. In verse number 10, Amasa took no heed to the sword in Joab's hand, so he smote him therewith in the fifth rib and shed out his bowels to the ground and struck him not again, and he died. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, pursued after Sheba. Now, Joab and Abishai won the battle. Now, get this. Here's our general. He shows up in front of all his soldiers that he's going to lead into battle. And Joab murders him right there in front of everybody. His first day on the job, so to speak. Now, let me just give you a couple of quick things about Amasa's disloyalty that we can see in him. Loyalty is adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of those that I am serving. First of all, when you look at Amasa and his life, his background, we see that he was most likely a person that was filled with a lot of resentment. Growing up, he was an illegitimate child, and they were not thought of very well in those days. He would have probably been teased at all the family get-togethers. He would have been an outcast of the family, and I'm sure that that would cause a great deal of resentment and bitterness because he could not get beyond his past, his upbringing. By the way, I know a whole lot of people that are bitter because they can't get over their past because of things that happened to them years ago. When God says, forget it, forsake it, and move on. And then he had, secondly, and I'm just going to give these quickly, desire for glory. Boy, he had a position now. He was somebody. He wanted to be a military leader. He sought that leadership in Absalom's army, which that ended up a failure. But now he got his chance in the spotlight. King David asked him to be his commander-in-chief of his army. Wow! I ought to get a special smiley button for that. I am somebody special now. And boy, this is worth celebrating. Sure, David told me I got to be in the battlefield tomorrow morning, but I'm out celebrating. Boy, this is the time. I'm having a great time, and I don't have time to be bothered by the king's commands because I am someone special now, and he desired glory for himself, and it caused him to be derelict in his duties because he paid too much attention to himself. And then, thirdly, and this is the most obvious, his disloyalty was seen by his tardiness. He worked on his own time schedule. I know we're supposed to be at church at this time, but we can be there 5 minutes late. I know we're supposed to be at work at this time, but we can be 5 minutes late. It's no big deal. I know that Mom and Dad said I'm supposed to do this now, but I can put it off till I'm done with this. And his tardiness caused him his position, caused him his dignity as he was slain in front of all his soldiers that had gathered at his command, and even caused him his life. It's amazing what our disloyalty, what our tardiness can cause because of our resentment and bitterness of our past, because of our desire to be someone instead of realizing that we're nobody outside of the grace of God, and because of our tardiness, doing things according to what we desire, what we want, what we plan. How we figure on doing this, never mind the person that's in charge, we've got our own agenda. The loyalty is adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of those I'm serving. And our verse is, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what the day may bring forth. Never put off till later what ought to be done today. We ought to be loyal to the one that we are serving. Father, we pray.